All right. Well, thank you all for coming today. We don't have a huge crowd today, but that's good. You kind of well. So we want to go ahead and talk about predatory interactions today.
Sounds good. My name is Bill Woloshensky. I'll just give you a short introduction. I'm a lecturer here at the University of Texas. This is my third year here. I was in Nebraska for many years at various places. My PhD is in math, believe it or not. When we do this, you'll say, really? And it is. I took all those hard math courses too. But I'm a math biologist is what I am. And when you talk about applied mathematicians, there's a joke that some of me and my colleagues have, actually. There's three types of applied math people. There's applied math people who all they really do is prove everything. But they do it with PDEs and everything else, and that's a great field. Then there's applied math people who they still do mostly proofs, but their original problems are actually grounded in something natural. But then they'll introduce it that way, but then it's just proving things again. And then there's people like me who are applied, who we don't prove anything. We model everything. And so today you'll see that a lot of my research was in predator-prey, and it was very specific. A bunch of my research was on grasshoppers and wolf spiders. Wolf spiders are the ones that wander. They don't make webs. And believe it or not, they account for, according to biologists, roughly 30% of predation on grasshoppers, which is a lot. People don't realize that, but in prairie areas, they account for a lot of the predation. And so we modeled that interaction a lot. And when you're doing that, since it's a predator-prey situation, you really have to talk about how do you want to model predation. And there's some really good questions that go on. And in fact, with climate change, it makes them more interesting. And that's some of my leaving remarks. If people are interested, I could point you in the right direction of some work on incorporating temperature into these models. But so today it will be introductory. We're going to do a lot of hands-on stuff, and then we're going to get to do some homework. So what I want to talk about, we'll start off with just this first page. And there's functional responses actually have been around. Since I think the term was first coined in around 1940, but it really took off in the 50s, late 50s, when C.S. Hawling did these disc experiments with actual people, what we're going to repeat today. And nowadays, when you talk about functional responses, most people relate it to these three that we'll talk about. And the first one is a type 1 response. And basically, it's the simplest response that you can make. It's not very realistic, but sometimes when you start modeling phenomenon, you want to start with the simplest things first. And so it's a very simple response. You can see by the picture down here, it's just a nice straight linear response. It's not realistic, but it was a good way to maybe start when you're doing some modeling. And you can read what I have written down there, but an ecological example is actually a passive predator such as a spider. And when they make a web, the number of flies caught in the net is proportional to the fly density, for an example, if you were talking about flies. And so prey mortality due to predation is a constant, which isn't usually the case. But in a few simple examples, it does work that way. The one we'll spend the most time on today is the type 2 response. It's used a lot to model things, and you can see it's this really nice curve, the type 2 curve, that as the prey density increases, meaning there's more things out there in a certain region. So what we're going to do today is we're going to just take a table and divide it up into a nice little region. That's what we're talking about. Densities need to really have some area when you're doing these predator-prey models. Counts aren't what we use densities, because that's what you can measure. So we never talk about like the total number of grasshoppers, you talk about a density per a certain area. So as the density increases, heck, there's more of them, so what's going to happen? The rate of predation will increase. but it can't increase forever. Meaning, just think about if I dumped a bunch of M&Ms on the table and we all like those, you start eating them, but there's a certain maximum rate you can consume them. You can't just keep eating them faster and faster, and so that's why those taper off. And then there's the type 3 response. By the way, you can see I tried to include a nice little ecological example each time. Whoops, feeding on elk is an example of a type 2 response. Type 3 responses are actually very interesting, too. And you can see the type 3 curve. It ends up similar to, you know, they converge there, the type 2 and the type 3, but they're quite different at low densities. And what a type 3 might be, there's a couple of ways type 3s actually arise, is one, maybe the density is so low that the predator just doesn't notice them much and think they're worth pursuing. And so they really don't catch much until there becomes a critical number of the prey, and then the predator says, like, wow, I can really eat a lot of these now. Birds do this a lot, actually. And so that is the type 3. And, of course, being mathematics, they all have their mathematical equations. And so question, and if you have questions, I'm a really casual person. Just interrupt me. You don't hurt my feelings. Just let me know. So what affects the functional response? There we go. Well, one is that the predator becomes satiated, meaning they're full. They have no need to eat anymore. So then their rate of feeding is limited by the rate at which they can digest and assimilate food. And that's a big one in a lot of species.
There are two species which have the same density, but one is easier to find and one is harder to find.
Type 3. That's a good question. So the question was, what if you have two prey? Very good question. What if you have two prey in a region and the predator can eat either one of them? Well, sometimes, how will they decide which one they want? Well, it depends on how easily identifiable one of them will be. Meaning, if one of them is easier to catch, and that's what the type 3 will actually, they'll switch to the easier usually, which makes sense because they expend less energy if it's an easier prey to catch. Very nice question, actually. And so you can see that is one thing that really, really matters, and this is what we're going to do in our experiments today. As the predator captures more prey, they have to handle that prey. So if you're going to consume something, we do too. We handle it before you can consume something else. So handling it consists of eating it, consists of digesting it. It consists of a lot of different factors here. And again, it takes time to do that. So it caps the maximum rate that predation can occur. So the predator cannot find prey and eat it any faster than a certain rate. That's why they all level off. And so C.S. Holling noticed all these relationships. C.S. Holling's a biologist, actually, not a mathematician. And he came up with this really famous, it's called the disk equation. And he said, we should relate all of these variables, the number or density of prey items. How good you see things makes a difference. So a constant representing capture rate or searching efficiency of the predator. Some predators are better at finding things than others. Total time that you can go and do all of these jobs, eating, capturing, handling it. Little h is the handling time per prey. So when you catch a prey, you're going to have to handle it. So we want to know what the average handling time per prey is. P sub E is the number of prey items eaten per predator over a certain amount of time. When I develop this model later on today, I'm going to do it per time too. but they have the same shape. It's just dividing out by a constant. So total time handling the prey. So now, if you have a day, how much of that day is spent handling prey? Well, it would be the number per prey times the number of prey caught. And T of S is the time searching for prey. And I make just some little notes down here, and you can sure read them, but this is the equation that we're going to focus a lot of our talk on today. And it relates all of those quantities above in a nice little equation. The graph of it being just what I showed earlier. The graph, if you were to plot that equation, it's the type 2 right here. So that's what it looks like. And we will derive that later today.
So the time here in PE is different from the time in T, or?
No, PE would represent, if I said we're going to do this for a day,
right.
Big T would be the one day, 24 hours.
And so even though you have PE is per day, you still have a T here?
It doesn't have to be per day. Maybe I... these do have a T in them. Let me think about this a second. PE is the number over amounted time.
Time that they have in a day, like if you subtract out the sleeping time or something?
No. If you take a total day out for a predator, they're going to search and they're going to handle. We're going to partition it into those two things. That's what we're going to do. And you will see... I'm doing this, and I'll try to get your question in a second. Let me think on it. But when I derive these, I don't do it this way. This is a more biological way.
Okay.
So T is the total time that you run this. I like that question. Let me think about that. But you can see we do partition T into two pieces, the time searching and the time handling. Yes.
What is the percentage of the day, of the amount, the percentage of the day spent searching for prey?
It depends on the predator.
So the predator is on a type 2 basis?
Even on a type 2. For an example, I'll give you what I worked on a lot, is if you think about a spider. Spiders actually are exotherms, meaning they have to have external temperature to warm their bodies. And they like to operate about in a certain range. So when we worked with wolf spiders like the external temperature to be around 70 to 85. Colder than that, they don't want to do much. Warmer than that, they don't want to do much. So that part of the day is the day that they're going to be out there hunting. Is what they'll be doing. And during that time they're hunting, that will be what we encompass as T for them. They hunt.
Really?
They do.
They make loads of spider webs and just try to trap lots of animals.
Well, the wolf spider is a cool one in that they don't make webs.
They don't make webs.
That's why I think their name is very appropriate. They actually go out on the prowl and they look for their prey. The wolf spiders, what you can also denote, there's a lot of them around here. They'll get pretty big, actually. But one of the things you'll note, if you see a wolf spider, if you ever see a spider with a bunch of little ones climbing on its back, that's a wolf spider. When they finally hatch out their eggs, they carry their egg sac with them, and then when it hatches for a few days, those babies are crawling on the spider. So the wolf spider is that kind of spider. It's not a web one. Yes?
I think you said wolf spiders.
Wolf? I say them wrong. I know. My students pick on me on the way I say things.
Okay, so on the definition of PE, it says number of prey per predator over a certain amount of time.
So is E a variable then?
Because you said a certain amount of time.
It's just piece of E just means... the prey eaten. The E just represents how many are eaten. I mean, piece of E is just a denotation for...
Okay, because this could be a day or...
Absolutely.
A day or an hour.
Could be a month. Yep.
But how do we know which one it is? And what would affect the equation for difference?
It wouldn't affect it as far as... the qualitative behavior, meaning you're going to get this curve right here. And it's up to the researcher to decide what their time interval is. There's no set. It's species dependent. Some species, you know, for an example, some big snakes will eat once every 2 months.
Okay.
And so for them, they might want their time interval to be 2 months or 3 months or 4 months or whatever. But for a wolf spider, they like to eat if they can get it every day, they will. But even if they could eat every few days, capture something, they'd be happy. Nice question. So what we would like to do is talk about how this works with predation. And so towards that, we have an assignment that we get to do. And we'll investigate the predation rates of a type 2 forager. Oops, there we go. So what I've brought here is, it's great if you can work in groups of four, but if you can't, that's okay too. And one of the group in the group of four will be the predator. And the predator has to be blindfolded. So these are freshly washed, they're not dirty. I cut them up, trust me, they're clean. But you get to be blindfolded. The predator does.
I want
you. You want to be the predator? All right. And then what we'll do is we'll use each person, each table is great. We're going to need somebody to set out the prey. And what do I mean by setting out the prey? Let's just divide the table up, you know, kind of in a quarter. We'll all have the same area. And we'll set a certain number. I've got pennies and washers. Yep, pennies and washers is what I brought. Just so you know that Holling did this with little pieces of sandpaper. Circular disc. So I didn't have any little ones, and I didn't want to buy them and cut them because they would have dulled the heck out of all my scissors. And they were more, I have all these pennies sitting around. So it's very similar. And what the predator does, just so we're all clear, so you'll have, somebody will set these out on the table. You'll be blindfolded. And then the way you find them, so you're blindfolded, you can't see, you've got to tap. Nice answer. So you'll pick it up, and I'll also have a little bowl for you. Then you've got to put it in your bowl, and then you can go hunting again. So the picking up and dropping in the bowl is the handling time. So it simulates the handling time that a predator has to have on a prey. Then when you do this, so you're the predator, you've done your job, somebody else at the table will say, okay, we need to replace that one. And so you'll put another one on the table, some not in the same place, because we don't want the person who just captured it to say, well, I don't know, I know it's right in this area. So you'll put it somewhere else. Now, I hope, I'm not a good guy with my, people make fun of my, you know, I can use electrical stuff, but like when it comes to cell phones, don't they have stopwatches on them? We need a timer, two timers at the table. One will time the overall duration, that's that capital T. The capital T will be 60 seconds in our problem. Okay? And then the other person, so here's the other person's goal. So I'm the predator. Once I identify this, start your stopwatch and time the amount of time that it takes for me to pick this up, drop it in my bowl, and then stop again. Because that's handling time. We want to keep track of the total handling time. So for every time they catch one, you start the stopwatch again. So the handling time, you know, might only be, depending on how many they catch and everything, might only be 20 seconds, but the overall experiment might be 60. I'm going with 60, but we can make it longer if you'd like. Yes?
So, like, you start the stopwatch over again every time the predator catches a penny, picks it up, and gets it in the bowl?
Once, so one person has their stopwatch running all the time. Mm-hmm. And then if I was the one timing the handling, once you find a penny, so you get your penny, and right when you get it, I start my other stopwatch. And I keep it running, and let's just pretend this is the bowl. You drop it in the bowl, then I stop my stopwatch. Now you are hunting again, and once you get another one, I start my stopwatch again. So I want it to... I don't reset it. I want it to accumulate as you go through this. And then again, you do it, and then once they drop it in, you stop it.
So if we have a fixed set of time of 60 seconds, why do we need to be timing that? don't we have a set time of 60 seconds?
We do.
So should we still be timing the 60 seconds? Or like?
Yes, so a different person is doing the 60 seconds.
All right.
So you have one person doing the 60 seconds, just keeping track, and when they yell start, the predator starts looking, and then the other person won't start theirs until they actually get something. And then they want to let it accumulate each time. Is that okay?
So once the 60 seconds are over, they say stop?
They say stop, the predator stops, and then you'll write down in that chart, you'll fill in the chart for that trial. And what I thought would be more interesting, this is just, you know, when you work on these things, I changed it. Instead of doing 4 twice, why don't we do 4, 8, 10, 15, 30, and 90? That way we'll have more points there to mess with later on. I changed a lot of this just last night. So I had it done, then I started looking at it again, and so we'll do these all. So for the type 2, as I said, if you're the predator, you'll be sitting there. Just to rehash how this should work, I'll have my tray here. If you're left-handed, right-handed, get it on the appropriate side of the table. So like I went, being right-handed, I would want to sit here. That way I could have my dish over here and it'd be easier for me. But if you want to use your left, that's good too, because it's just, it would be a predator who's not as efficient at handling is what it would simulate. So I mean, it's cool if you do it that way. Either way. And so you're looking, we've got the timers going on. We've got the other fourth person. So the fourth person, you got two timers, you got the predator, and then you have the replacement person. So the replacement person is if you're the predator and you find one of these, I somewhere else put a new one down. So I want the density to stay as constant as possible is what I'm doing. We're not depleting things. We're letting the density stay constant. But don't put it in the same place, because we want it to, because if you always put it in the same place, that predator is going to be really smart. And what are they going to do? They're going to go right back to that place. And we will do that later on, similar to that. That's when you do the type 3 response. That's when the predator learns how to become more efficient. So we'll clump our prey then. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes. So questions on what the first, this is for the type 2. At each table you need a predator, two timekeepers, and a replacement person. You're the predator, I take it?
Yes.
So we got a predator at this table. So each table, and if there's not enough people, I'm sure we can get people to join in. And so timer people, predators, replacement people. And I will hand out my homemade, and then I'll put a bunch of pennies at everybody's table. My homemade.
Do you want to stay at this table, or do you want someone else, or like, so you can walk around?
I could walk around, or I could be.
Is the size of the area where the prey sits, is that defined?
All I'm defining it as, I'm making it roughly. So when you're doing this, we want to make a boundary of a quarter of the table, roughly. Yep. So here's a blindfold for this table. And I've got quite a few pennies. I think eventually we'll need about 150 at a table when they're doing the 90s, but I've got some washers also. Is that okay?
It's fine with me. He's counting.
I'll just put out a handful and we'll divvy them up. You got one? Who's the predator here?
And what's her name?
Gavin.
Predator. Does every table have a blindfold? I tried to make them about the same size. I mean, they're not. There's a lot of pennies in there. I know it doesn't look like maybe there is, but.
Oh, yeah, we have one more upstairs.
Oh, awesome, awesome, awesome.
Wait, I have a question.
Yes, yes.
Do you move the bowl?
Not in this experiment. Great question. In this experiment, I want the bull to stay kind of constant, meaning I want it to be whoever's the predator, the bull stays in about the same place. I know your hand might bump it. I know that.
She needs two bulls, or...?
It's easier, yes. I've got more bulls. One bull. Yeah, so we've got...
The predator know where the bull is?
They should, yes. Put it where she's comfortable with it.
Put the bull wherever you want.
I would try to put it a little... Just think about, we want to break this up into a quarter. So I'd try to put it maybe like right here, if that would work.
Okay.
That way, we want it to be out of the predator ring.
Right.
And we're only to use one finger?
Yes. And I know it's going to be hard when there's not many. I know that.
Okay.
And that shows why at low density, predator rate is really low. Okay. Because finding them is hard. But then we'll keep increasing the density, and we'll see that it becomes much easier then.
So it's my square then.
Yes. Is that okay?
Yeah.
If you're the predator, it's your square right here.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Everybody, if you want two bowls, one that might make it easy is that way you can just keep those in there, so when you put it in.
You might
In case, what it's nice for the person putting the pennies out there.
Uh-huh.
That way, it's easier to maybe grab them.
Oh, yeah.
But it's up to you.
All right. So I guess you can count it for you.
It's hard when there's four. I know that. I expected this to be. You're gonna go home hungry tonight. I bet you'll find more, though, when we go to the next one and then the next one. Just so you know, Holling ended up, his upper limit was 256, and he did a 3x3 space, just so you know. So his spot was not too much different than ours, maybe a little bit, but Holling did this with a 3x3 space. Somebody gets to eat tonight. Replace it. The one she, yeah, throw one out there somewhere.
Yeah, maybe we should get one of us should record it and then keep the blindfold on.
So remember to replace, if they find one, put a new one out there somewhere. So be putting, let me get you more. I'm sorry. We'll have to start over. And you were doing so well, actually. You were going to eat well in this experiment now, you know.
How long did I spend processing the fry?
7.5. If they're close, you could count. It probably won't matter one way or the other. You were doing good. But I liked his one slight, and that's cool that you put it way over there because, you know, in a real arena, they're dispersed randomly pretty much.
I was going to leave this part alone because I figured nobody would get it.
He did a good job. He slid that baby over there.
Nope, you're off the square. There you go.
You're replacing,
right?
Nope. She said it did sort of in that other way. Yeah. I think it's going to
It's going to get harder and harder as time goes on.
No, I just make the next one.
Oh, yes.
Go. And that's my.
Hey, Frey got away.
How many do I get now? 15?
For Frey?
Gavin, hands up.
Oh, we're getting more density here. Remember, we want to use one finger.
Yeah, one finger.
No. One finger is the key here. Otherwise, you're a more efficient predator.
Wait, what did you say?
You were doing it fine. Just tap with the one finger when you're looking for them.
Was someone else doing it?
No, no, they're all doing fine. I'm just reminding.
What's the density of this
sound? How's the data looking? Is it getting better as you move along?
Oh, yeah.
Is the average?
Yeah.
Okay, no, that's okay.
You lost the connection.
It's kind of nice if you do, but if you want to switch it up, meaning what I wanted to kind of, if somebody has the same technique, meaning if you switch, just do it the same way. That way, you'll see Yes, that's all I was looking for is consistency. So if you're doing it the same way, but what's cool is, what I thought would be cool is some people are going to do it faster, and so you'll see differences at tables.
I got four this time.
You had two brains and got away.
Do you have a guess for how many you got this time?
How did I get away?
10?
Yeah, probably.
How many did I get? On your mind. That's it. Yeah.
What, you got four?
He's got a strategy, which is good. I mean, that's, it's just not working well.
Okay. Okay.
Problem is when I hit him, they move.
And that, but that's cool.
He models reality, right?
It does. No, it does. To let you kind of know what's cool about that is, you know that grasshoppers actually employ vigilance in the presence of spiders. You don't think they would, but they're smart enough to. And how did they test this? They actually put wax on the wet fangs of the wolf spider, put them in this arena, and they could attack the grasshopper, but not kill it, of course. And so what they showed is that the grasshopper, when they knew there was a wolf spider in that area, would not move, because then it couldn't identify it. And so it ate less. So they do employ vigilance, actually. oh, this is looking easier for the old predator. They can be lazy now.
I got 5, then 5, then 4, then 8.
It's going up. You're doing better.
No, I was 5, 5, and then I got 4, but then I got 8.
But the last one was good.
Yes, it was.
So, as you keep jabbing, you really don't feel things anymore.
It goes numb. Well, you're lucky. See, Holling even had more on here. So, you know, we're doing an abbreviated It didn't go as well?
I think it got tired. It got fewer with...
I think we do. More pennies. More pennies. If not, I've got washers.
Where's the jar?
We should do this at the party.
I don't know, but we can do this.
You think so?
And again, I have a bunch of washers if we run out of pennies, so.
Start now.
Oh, so we should be clear about the rule. Are we allowing one to pick up at once?
We should only allow one at a time. Great question.
Okay.
Great question.
All right.
75.
You're set.
That's far. I can hardly reach that far.
Yeah, sure. All right, ready? Set.
Is it supposed to work that way, where the more the density goes, the slower I get?
No, it is not. It's supposed to be the other way.
Look at what you're supposed to do for the speed design. So, it's going to be time.
Yeah, right here.
Okay.
So, you're actually improving.
Is he improving?
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's what it should be. It should be.
I'm not moving. 1, 2, 3,
4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
That is time.
How'd it go?
I counted 15.
15?
Yeah.
Okay. Did I have my hand on the second?
Nine.
That's pretty useful.
Yeah, no, he's doing pretty.
Yeah, I would like.
Sure.
Oh, sure.
Now you're up to the 90?
Yeah. So we have a random.
How many do you have here?
Pretty random distribution. So also the handling time will be random. Joel, will it be random or? So what do you expect? You know, we have a nice random distribution. Right?
If it's a nice random, yeah, we should have a nice random distribution.
Mm-hmm.
What we should find out that the handling time remains about constant when they're doing these, even with more density.
Mm-hmm.
But there'll be search time will go down.
search time will be definitely go down.
Yeah.
We have like a pretty high density, you know. The search time will be.
Yeah, but the limiting factor will be that handling time. Mm. Should remain pretty much the same. Because you'd still have to pick it up, move it.
Right, that's right.
Did I get your question? I might not have understood.
I'm just trying to understand because...
So what I'm trying to show is that...
Kind of like I try to understand the theory behind this. So we have random distribution. It's most like a plus or like a time problem, I think. I don't know. I'm trying to match it to a problem.
So it is, you're absolutely right. Should be randomly just like this is pretty darn nice. Randomly distributed. But you should improve on the number of prey eaten, but your handling time, the reason I'm focusing on that is the handling time per prey should be about the same. And that's, is it saying about this? I mean, I know it'll differ a little bit, but...
That pretty much makes sense. But, we have a similar problem in our department, so I'm working on communication. So
okay.
In communication, we have very similar problems.
I believe that.
Yeah, it depends on cell phone users, how many cell phone users within a boundary, so that how many stations we need to cover that many.
Understood. Yeah, understood. It's kind of the same way because you probably do it with disk or whatever.
Yeah, to be honest, we borrowed that problem from biology and some other area, with the threatened framework model.
And it's funny when you say that. A lot of what we borrow, they've done in chemical engineering, like when I did my digestion models.
Now they're always like that.
So we always borrow things. You're welcome.
But did that one quicker when processing it or slower?
Processing time should be about the same per prey.
No, I meant
we're cycling through again to see if there's any learning.
Yeah. Understood. And I think I can answer your question about that T. It's actually that piece of E is the total prey eaten during some duration.
Okay.
And the duration would be the T.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Later on, we'll divide it and make it then per time.
Okay. Okay.
Very nice question. Thanks. You can also change the results. This is kind of cool. You can use quarters instead of pennies, so you've got a... Yeah.
We found a nickel.
I see that. That's what made me think that was the nickel sitting there.
That's your diet.
We're going to do this in a different way now, once we're done with this experiment, to try to simulate those other two responses.
What troubles me is that the predator's learning.
The predator's learning?
He's not learning. So he's just in a big pile here, and he goes... in the same spot. He's not searching really. He's tapping in the same spot.
They tap the same spot, something will appear.
Well, we need to make it a different bait. We need to let them go out there further, darn it.
And when the prey density is low, there's more noise. The data you get has more noise in it. So when it's 4 and 8, it seems like it's not very consistent.
I would agree. Yeah. I would agree. And it really probably makes a difference on how uniform the distribution is.
The second one here.
Is what I mean, if it was really uniform and the same technique is kind of being used, it would balance out a little more.
You know the density is, say, constant. Do you throw them out like a Poisson process, or do you throw them... what do you do? Not here. I mean...
Well...
Let me simulate it.
As far as... I think it depends... I want to make sure I understand the question, right? Are you talking like the distribution of the prey? They can be distributed differently.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Like a point process, they can have different...
Yeah. So some...
density, it can behave differently.
Yes. We're going to do the type 3. We'll clump them.
Yes, because that's what happens with Poisson point processes.
Okay.
They end up having little clusters,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
And we as humans, we don't like to put stuff in little clusters.
So that would be a different thing. Yes.
So we will be doing that.
All right.
And I didn't know that. You're teaching me things new all the time. But
is someone coming?
No, she's doing it for
a while. Let me do this just for a while.
I want to. Okay, start again.
So is it different if you have competing predators at the same location?
Yes.
They got experiments with like multiple people in one area? And
I don't know if they have with people, not that I know of.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of models out there with competing predators and everything else, competition models. But I don't know if they simulated it, which would be kind of interesting.
Right.
So that's a cool question.
What exactly is allowable? Do you run
You're right.
somebody else, can you knock their hand away?
Absolutely. The rules to simulate it, if they're competing predators, but themselves, they don't, it doesn't make them different, any difference to them, then you could allow the bumping in and all that. But if two predators also would prey on each other, that would get the dynamics. Now, if you bump in, you're like, now we fight over who.
What do you mean, prey on each other?
They could.
Eat each other.
Yes.
But wouldn't that be harder for them to eat each other than
all the rice? Usually it is. You're absolutely right. They don't like to, because there's more energy expended usually trying to capture something that fights back.
But if there were a limited supply of prey, it might be worth it.
Well, that's where you have cannibalism.
Right.
A lot of predators are cannibalistic, especially in resource limited regions.
And also, not only do they expend more energy, they might have to get
gas. I'll tell the whole group this. I garden a lot, and I'm kind of new to Texas, meaning this is I've lived here now 5 years, but I just started gardening here 2 years. And this summer, I love ladybugs. Everybody knows ladybugs are good. And I was out there picking my okra, and my wife says to me, she says, Bill, that bug's eating those ladybugs. And there was some ugly looking bug, had a ladybug in its pinchers and had killed it. And I was like, that can't be a good bug. So I killed this bug thinking it was a bad bug. But being who I am, I wanted to know what it was. So I go in the house, I Google, all the, and it's called a wheel bug.
What?
A wheel bug, W-H-E-E-L. And they are like one of the top insect predators, actually. And it's awesome to have them. But it's one predator eating another predator in a way, because they're both predators. It's just the one's an alpha predator, different trophic levels. And so I learned that. I felt bad but I only killed one. I felt bad.
Even alpha predator.
Yeah, but I don't want to,
part of the same ecosystem.
And so it was my mistake. But they actually...
I'm sure the wheel bug didn't feel bad about killing the ladybug.
No, you're right. You're right. But he was doing it for his survival. I was doing it because I was trying to, protect my garden.
Is it also called an assassin bug?
They could... I'm really not blind. I'm really blind, so can you blow that baby up? That could be it. It could be it. It's an ugly-looking bug, but it's actually a good bug. Yeah.
Go ahead. I own a butterfly net, and the only thing I've ever used it to catch. Well, only my parents have ever used it to catch anything, because it's kind of dangerous catching yellow jackets.
You're right.
Know why?
Because they sting.
Yeah, but know why they were catching them?
Why?
Because they were eating the caterpillars.
It's true.
Yeah, we've been growing parsley and a bunch of flowers, so the caterpillars would eat them, so we can have a bunch of butterflies.
That is cool. Really?
I'll give it a break.
Sure. We can take a break, and then we'll come back and maybe we'll do the type 3 and skip the linear.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah.
So if we want to take a 10-minute break, we'll come back and do the type 3. I'll probably skip the linear, but if you want to do it at home, it's included on how to do the linear simulation. And then we can talk about deriving these equations.
Is there, when this is done, is there a big, like...
predator subject fixed effect, or is pretty much everybody the same in terms of how well they do it? Or do you have to, like, I mean, if you really wanted to derive this equation, are you worried about that, or you'd want to have the same person do it many, many times?
You would want the same,
instead of getting different people.
I agree.
But, I mean, I don't, but it might not matter if everyone is more
free. If they're using...
Pretty much the same.
If it's pretty much the same and everybody's distributing them pretty evenly.
Right.
I mean, that was what Hauling actually...
Yeah, that's true, right. You have to, there could be a distributor fixed effect.
Yes.
If some people distribute them in a way that's easier to find.
Absolutely.
That's probably the bigger factor.
And I know today I could have really tried to hone in on making it, but I just wanted to give the hands-on experience of what's happening. And but you're absolutely right.
Let's try it.
You'd want to minimize all those effects to get a really nice curve that is like the type 2. You're absolutely correct. Yes.
Like he said, maybe we could try, like...
But definitely the density
helps. Maybe two predators or something in the same area.
I would agree. Those are things that... You know, I talk to students a lot, and I mean this, on the college level about good undergraduate, which can even lead to graduate research, and it's just coming up with a different way of looking at something and say, what would happen? And you might be surprised sometimes that a lot of people haven't looked at that specific little thing, and you've got a whole new problem. And sure, it's similar to something else, but that doesn't mean it's not a good problem. And so I'll also share with people, I don't know what people do, fields are, or anything like this, but you know that right now, and it's really freeing, I'm working on it, people can laugh at me, I'll tell everybody, but a monster math problem. There's this guy publishes these books, he was looking for papers on certain new monsters out there, and I said there's going to be zompires. So what happens when a vampire gets infected by a zombie? So I'm creating this model of that. And it's really freeing because you can set the rules you want. I mean that. And so
because zompires aren't real, so you can make them do whatever you want.
Absolutely, you can.
Have a referee telling you, I don't think that's a decent assumption.
Absolutely. No, you can. You. And what's cool, where I think this has a really lot of credibility, and I wish I could give you the specific instance. He's done a previous book, and one of the models in that book was picked up by somebody in medical research because that model fit something they knew about. Now, the person writing it didn't know about it. And so sometimes what happens is if we always, being a mathematician where most of your focus is on math, I don't know these little, you know, I don't know enough about cell dynamics, for an example.
Right.
To do something, but somebody else might read this and say, you know what, this kind of fits what's going on here.
Right.
And so I think it's actually a really good thing to do, because somebody else might be interested enough, because you write it a little bit fictional, so people get engaged in the story, but you do some good math in it. But they kind of understand what you're doing, rather than when you read a traditional research paper, if you're not in that area, you pick it up and you look at it and say, oh, this is really cool, and you set it down.
I'm super excited about talking about zompires. When are we going to get to do that?
You want, maybe towards the end I'll talk about zompires. And maybe you can give me some good rules about them. So do you...
When a vampire gets infected by a zombie and becomes a zompire?
And think about this.
What do zompires do?
They eat vampires.
They eat vampires? What about zombies?
Zombies like humans, mostly.
But zombies sometimes attack vampires?
Well, usually they won't, but what happened, here's how I introduced a zompire. You'll maybe like this idea. The humans were being defeated by the zombies. And the vampires said, you know what, if all the humans die, we need humans to live, we'll be in trouble. So they came to the aid of humans, and they were great, great zombie fighters, because they're strong, they're fast, they're great zombie fighters that turned the tide towards the end of the big zombie invasion. So you got these vampires, and they're fighting with the humans.
That sounds... So when a zombie infects a human, it turns into another zombie?
Yes. Yes.
Humans go to zombies, via zombies. Humans go to vampires, via vampires. Zombies... Wait, no, no, no. How does zombies...
Here's how they get created in my... I made this so it wasn't a problem. What happened is...
Zombies, they become zombies.
Kind of. What happened is... What happened in my little thing to make my math easy enough is a vampire was feeding on a human because they ran out of energy, they were fighting, they grabbed a human, was feeding on a human. At the same time, that human was bitten. And so that's how the blood got into the vampire, if that makes sense. I mean, I know that's...
When
a vampire bites an infected human?
So when a vampire bites a zombie on accident?
Well, suppose, depending on what zombie movies we all watch, and again, that's where, in my case... Okay. So what they can do is sometimes when you're bitten by a zombie, it takes a little while to turn into one.
Okay.
And so what happens is somebody was bitten, the vampire decided they were hungry and ate the infected person. Well, or not, I shouldn't say ate, but sucked their blood like vampires like to.
And but before they turned into an actual zombie?
Yes, yes, and that's how the vampire got infected.
So, and then it turned into a zombie. What do zombies do?
Attack other vampires.
And then they turn other vampires into zombies?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Okay.
And so now we've got a real problem, and here's what's cool about my model. The only way to defeat a zompire is that the humans and the vampires have to work together. So you've got a predator-prey, because if there's a human and there's a vampire together, like say you're the human, your dad's the vampire, if I'm a zompire, 100% of the time I'll attack the vampire, which leaves the human the freedom to end the life of the zompire. So they have your secondary prey. Yep.
So you don't wait. Do zombies ever attack you?
Very seldom. Only under really extreme circumstances. No, nope. They don't want those darn zombies. They don't taste good at all.
Okay, so they only take people when there's
really
vampires at all.
Yes, yes.
You kind of have a situation where you have like a human that's like in a sub zombie state.
Yes.
Do you also have a sub vampire state?
I make it a really quick turn.
Okay.
Nope, because it made my model easier. So I'm telling you the truth. Otherwise, you do have that state if I said it was one that persisted for a while.
Because in other books I read, if you're not a full vampire until you drink the blood of another human, and then you become a full vampire. So you are kind of like in a sub.
Yes.
But the math would get to the state.
It would. So that's what's so freeing about this. That's my rules, darn it.
How do you get more people who are more vampires?
Well, the vampires can attack more humans to increase their population.
But vampires don't reproduce, and zombies don't reproduce. They only infect. But humans reproduce.
Yes, yes.
How often do the humans?
You can't infect them too fast, or else you'll be out of.
Yes, that's exactly it.
How often do the people reproduce in this model?
I made it, to make the math easy, I made it at a fixed rate.
Yeah.
So we do simplify things. Well, I know what I'd like to do, since you know how to simulate things, maybe we'll focus, I only have a 40-ish 5 minutes, so I'll focus on some math. You can take these home, and if you want to perform these other two operations, you can.
What other two operations?
Remember how I had three graphs? We did one of them, but we could do graphs on the other two. We could do experiments to simulate the other two also.
So.
Well, remember the type 3 one. Well, the type. Let's talk about the type 1. That's the easiest. And all you. That's where you don't have hardly any handling time. Meaning, I would let you, you're the predator, pretend you're the predator. You could. Remember how before you had to leave your bowl here and you'd had to pick up your pennies and move them and set them over here?
You let us be carrying the bowl.
And so then when you pick one up, you could just put it in there right away. So there's hardly any handling time. And so that's how you simulate the type 1. I'm listening.
But how would the type 3 work? I don't understand how the type 3 was different from the type 2.
The type 3, you're right, there's not a whole lot of difference. The type 3, we would clump them together. So you'd make clumps here.
Okay.
And so when you found a pile, you could just start taking them really quickly. Meaning once you kind of learn to identify them, you can pick them up, you can do it faster. The search time is decreased once there's enough of them. So that's what we do. But think about when, remember how we started with 4 pennies? What if there was just one clump of 4? It would take a long time maybe to find them. And so that's why if you look at those curves, the type 2 goes up fast, but the type 3 takes a while. But once you learn and there's enough of them out here, then it's really quick.
It's really fast?
Yes.
Yeah, why does the type 2, I understand that,
because think about, because that's kind of when the density, so when, just what you told me, what's your name?
Eva.
Eva? Eva, you told me really the answer to this. Remember how if we had 4 of them, I could just put them in one little stack like this. Let's not spread them out. Let's just stack them up. It might take a long time to find that one little stack, right? But as the density increases, you get more and more of these stacks. And once you find a stack...
So the stack has a maximum of 4 pennies?
Or you could make it however many you wanted. You truly could. Just be consistent, always kind of keep them somewhat uniform in numbers. The more stacks you find, once you pick up one, you know right to go back 2. You know where they're at. And so it involves learning, basically. You've identified where they're at, so you can get them pretty darn quick. And so early on, it's hard to get them. But once you get a lot of them, then you're saying, this is easy pickings, because I can just keep going back and getting them.
Do they keep adding them to the same pile?
No, that's a good question. If you want to simulate it, put it in a different pile. Otherwise,
the same pile they're picking from, you can't? Or you?
No.
Because that wouldn't work.
Because if you went and ate something, probably the next one that might not be reproduced.
I have had really good questions. And what I'm going to do, you know, these you can take home with you. Just for brevity, we did the type 2 response. I've also laid out, and there is a couple of typos in here, so I apologize for some of my typos. So when you read it, there's 2 or 3 of them. But there's a way to simulate the type 1. Here's how you would do the type 1. Oops. The only thing you would change is step 3 here. This time the predator is allowed to hold the bucket in one hand and search for the prey with the other. What would that do to handling time? Decrease it, right? So the type 1 is when your handling time goes to 0. And so that's how you would simulate it. That's how Holling simulated it. And then there's the type 3 response, which, again, if you're interested in these, and I've had so many great questions, the type 3 response is if the prey has refuge, or there's a lot of different reasons. This, I kind of gave the motivation why you might want to use a type 3. And so then how would you simulate it? You would clump the prey. You would clump them up. And that way they learn, like if you're a predator, it's really, this type 3 is indicative of predators who learn. So they know to go back to the same area to search. So you have them clumped. They still have to pick one up at a time, but they know right where to go back to get the next one. So the clumping effect, they've learned this is easy pickings, basically. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that is, there was another question that was asked to me about predators switching prey and everything else. These, that's indicative of, like, sometimes for a bird, you know that early in a season of grasshoppers, I'll bring up grasshoppers because that's what I know about a lot, birds don't go after them too much early on for a couple of reasons. One is, when they're little, they're probably hard to identify for a bird, or they just don't offer enough energy for the effort. But when they get bigger, birds switch, and when grasshoppers become adult, birds now become quite a big predator of them because they're easy to identify, plus they're nutritious, so you'll see them switch, and now they're easy to, it's easier to see them, everything else, it's easier to catch them, identify them, so they switch to those, and that would be like a type 3.
So,
I'll get yours next.
So we have two prey, and they're switching from type A to type B, and we're looking at the graph of type B. So if we graph B and the decrease of food A, will the graph of how much they eat A be the inverse function of the graph of how much they eat B?
Maybe, maybe not. And what I mean by that is, maybe their efficiency of the two type of predators is different. Meaning, maybe once they get to a certain size, it's easy to catch these, and the ones they were previously eating on, it wasn't as easy. So they actually would have different type of responses. Great question. Your question.
My question is, I think that it should be a way where you can just do
So you could get more than one at a time?
Yeah.
And so you're doing like a pack hunting thing? Absolutely. And there are mathematical models with pack behavior in them. Very nice question, observation. Eva?
You could use both hands.
You could. You could. You could also, you know, use two fingers instead of one. That would mean you have a bigger area that you can search at a time. You can alter all of those to get different behaviors. Yes?
Just like sweep with your entire arm.
You'd be one effective predator.
What?
If you swept them with your hand. Again, you have a bigger capture region is what you are. You're more effective at identifying them, really. Only humans. So I'll leave those for you to work on. And here's some things that I wanted to do. And by the way, there was a question early on that I didn't answer well at first. Really, this piece of E is the prey eaten over an interval of duration T is what that really means. That's why the T is in there. So we're not doing it per time yet. We will in a second, though. This is what biologists like to think about it, and I'll show you a little different on how mathematicians do it. So what I'd like to do next is let's derive that functional response. And so this is also in your group of papers somewhere along the way. I know I put a lot of them in there. I'm always ambitious on what I want to cover, but I never get everything covered. So it'll give you something to read. And so here's a way to derive the type 2 functional response. And then also you can see where you can get the type 1 and the type 3. And I'll let you guys do that today, actually. So the underlying assumption that this is out of, by the way, Logan and Woloszynski. So this is how we did it when we wrote this. So you can say that you have this nice relationship. And my R sub E is, if you read my, oh gosh, I don't see it all well, but it's defined in here. Thank you. R sub E is the number of prey actually encountered. So I'm not saying those are the ones you capture. Those are just what you would encounter. And we would assume that what would depend on how you encounter them? Well, your search speed, which would be area per unit time, the time that you search, and the prey density. That's a reasonable assumption is to make that would be your encounter rate. Well, of those encountered, you'll capture some of them. So that's what this R sub C is the ones captured now. And what is this D? It's just a fraction of, it represents the fraction of those that you encounter that you actually capture. Yes?
So is it like a cat sees a mouse, but it pounces on it, but the mouse runs away? Like it was encountered, but not captured?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or maybe the cat sees it, but doesn't really go after it for whatever reason. Very good question. And so then, all I did between here and here is just multiply by the ones we actually detect that we actually capture. So, the detected and finally consumed. And so then we just divide both sides by T sub S. And we get this nice linear function. Then we get the, when you divide by T sub S, now you've got the prey consumed per predator per time. So now we've got a per time unit in this. And it's a nice linear function of the density. And so that's the type 1 response. Then how do we get the type 2 response? We partition time for a predator is broken up into two duties, searching and handling. And what is the handling time equal to, the total handling time? Remember how I was having you compute H? That's like an average per prey captured, how much it takes per prey. Well, just multiply it by the number that you capture. And that would give you the total handling time in a certain time interval. So then you could just substitute T sub S is equal to the total time you have minus the handling time. And you come up with this nice equation for R sub C. And here is your first homework. Use algebra to solve for R. That dot shouldn't be there. My LaTeX messed up. Sorry. That should just be R. Use algebra to solve for R by using this little trick and see if you can get this response. I grouped some things together to call them alpha. So I'll see if you can do that. Just a nice little algebra problem. And if you need paper, I've got paper. So just let me know. And so then once you do that, see what you can see what happens to R when H goes to zero. And then finally, and if you need help with it, when I say H goes to zero, it's not exactly zero, but it's getting darn close to zero. And then what happens when N gets really, really big? See what happens in those three cases.
So we're doing that right now?
Yeah, if that's okay. I hope that people don't mind. I know I had to throw in some, and it's algebra. It's not anything really horrible, trust me. So,
where did this R come from? I don't see it on the sheet.
My R is, good question. I'm doing this a little different, so my R is right up here. It's the prey consumed per predator per time.
Prey consumed.
Yeah. Per predator. Okay.
Is what my R is. You need more of these or paper? Or?
No, I need to figure out how to do it before I can.
Oh, it's not that. Is that okay?
I do. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We gotta do some math at some point.
Okay. And if you need some help, let me know. I'm glad to help. Sure. Sorry. You're welcome.
Are we doing stuff with the data later? Or?
I was going to if we have time. Yes. Yes, I was going to. That's why I had all those little chart plots and that, but I wanted to get to... I know, time is always an issue, so... Is that okay?
Yeah, no, but I mean, you're running this, so everyone.
Well, I haven't, I want to do a good job, so if you guys, any advice, I'll listen.
Sure.
You won't hurt my feelings.
I think it would be cool to do stuff with the data, but
I do have it. I did have some built in there.
Yeah.
So one on top, that's also alpha, right?
Yes, they're both alphas.
Okay.
Yep. I also included the relationship between P sub E and R. They are a little different.
What's alpha?
I didn't tell you that. I wanted people to see what I'm clumping. I'm clumping some things.
Okay.
So I did not include what I did that on purpose. And if I have typos in there, my apologies.
So. Did you figure out what D is? What's D here?
It's the fraction, so they encounter some. It's the fraction that they actually attack, is what it would represent.
So you have R, so like the prey encounter equals the prey captured over the time, but the prey encountered is going to be greater than the prey captured.
It will be.
So time would have to be less than one, right?
Let's look at what we have here. So here's the ones we encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And then of those we encounter, a certain fraction of them.
Mm-hmm. We
actually attack them.
Mm-hmm.
And so then all I did here is divide both of them by the search time so we could get it as a per time unit. So R would represent the number.
Divide both sides by prey capture, then we would get 1 over D equals 1 over time. So D equals time.
Yeah.
You're on the right track. If we wanted to divide both sides of this by
prey captured, or R of C.
R of C. You'd have 1 is equal to all of this divided by R of C.
We'd have 1 over D, because we would have encountered over captured. Captured equals...
That should be D.
I thought D was captured over...
Oh, 1 over D. 1 over D, sorry.
Right, 1 over D, that's
yep.
what I was saying.
Okay.
1 over D, and on the other side we got 1 over time. Because we're dividing prey captured by over time by prey captured. So then we would get 1 in the numerator.
Okay, so... I got all the equation, but...
So we have, if we look at these units on this, I don't see any, I can't see hardly at all, so this is why it's always hard. I reach that age. So of the prey encounter, so all we did was multiply by D. So D, RC is just what you were mentioning, is D times R of E. And then what you told me you wanted to do was encountered over captured.
And then this is equal to 1 over time.
1 over D.
And this is also equal to 1 over time, because if encountered equals captured over time, and you divide by captured, you get encountered over captured equals 1 over time. Because isn't n over y divided by n equal to 1 over y? That's what I'm doing here.
So I'm just making sure my units. N is a density, so it's prey per area. So if we multiply it by a sub s... A sub s is equal to the product of the prey density. Gosh. Oh, region area A. So A of s is area per unit time. So A sub S is area per time. That would cancel with that time. So D would have units. When we plug all of that in there, are we going to get 1 over time units for D? That's possible.
Yeah, that's what we get when we divide both. So, like, because if we call prey encounter the E, prey capture C, we get, and time T, we get E equals C over T.
Okay.
So then let's divide both sides by C now. E over C equals 1 over T.
That's true.
So you were saying captured over encountered is D, right?
Yes.
So encountered over captured is 1 over D. So 1 over D equals 1 over T.
For time units.
Right. So D equals T.
If I have time in a few minutes, let's go through the dimensions of each of these quantities. I think D actually has dimensions. Density. We haven't divided out by the time here. So when we get to here, we have R, which is per time. D should be A sub S. A sub S is area per time. So I'm not sure. I'll have to look. I think the one unit might be off, but you're on the right track of how you want to analyze these.
Because I'm just dividing both sides by C and getting D equals T.
Because there is the relationship that these are similar, except they just differ by the D. But you're looking at dividing them, and you're right. You're going to get the 1 over D stuff. I absolutely agree with you.
So now let's multiply both sides by...
And I'm just making sure that it gives me the 1 over 2. It's what I would be looking for.
Because if E equals C over T, and we divide both sides by C, we get E over C equals 1 over T. Right?
But does... This is encountered... And this is
captured.
So I don't think that we're dividing by T.
I'm dividing both sides.
Right. No, I understand what you're doing.
Yeah.
But I think that the relationship between encountered and captured isn't related by time. Is what I'm saying.
Does it have time in the equation?
The time is actually stays the same in both places. So that's just search time, and then D is actually not so much a fraction of the time. It represents a fraction of the prey that we see that we actually attack.
Okay, so T is constant.
But T of S is the same search time. You're right. You're absolutely right. You have a nice way. I mean this. The best way to understand these models is to look at the dimensions of the terms. It truly is. And so you're really thinking of this in a nice way. I mean that. So have we figured out some of these? Were we able to get R equals some alpha times N 1 plus alpha H over N?
One thing you can do to get started is to just try using...
Was that doable? I didn't say what alpha was. That's for you to decide. Did we get anything? No? Do we want to run through it?
Are you sure it's one? The coefficients in front are different. So you cannot just simply say one.
How about we run through this? So what I wanted to do is we have R sub C equals D A sub S T minus H R sub C all over n. So step one, why don't we solve for r sub c? So to solve for r sub c, I would have r sub c is equal to d a sub s t times n minus d a sub s h r sub c times n. So I'm just multiplying everything out on the right-hand side. Then I'm going to move this term over with this term. And I would get that. But then I could factor out an r sub c from here. So I would get that, and then I would divide by this big mess here. How's that looking? And then what I want to do is divide both sides by T, big old T. How's that looking? What's a good choice for alpha? How's that look to everybody? Now, what happens if H is essentially zero? What does that turn into? If H is really close to zero, what happens here? So if H is about zero, wouldn't that mean this thing is almost zero here? And then what, the whole thing? Isn't that my linear response? My type 1 response. So when H goes to zero, you get the type 1. And then my next question was, if I can find them here. Oh, it's on here. Did anybody have any luck with the next question? Find the maximum capture rate, meaning what happens as n gets large. Yes, it is. So what happens when, very good, when n gets very large here, I'm going to do this in a really nice heuristic way here. If n is a huge number, does this plus 1 make much difference? If you have, I always tell my class, if you have $10 million and somebody gives you a buck, does it really make a difference? You'd still say you have $10 million. So what you could think about when n is large, so when n is big, really R is behaving like this. R is approximately alpha n alpha h times n. I'm not doing it formally, I understand that, but this is a nice little heuristic way of thinking about it. But then just by algebra, wouldn't these cancel out? And you would just get 1 over h. So remember how when you looked at those graphs, remember these graphs here? What is this value approaching right here? 1 over h. So that value is 1 over h, is what this is approaching. So if you wanted to plot here, you'd say this is 1 over h. Then, I'll skip number, this was supposed to be exercise 5, one of my typos. Did anybody do exercise 5? Because it's really cool. Exercise 5 says, now suppose that this alpha that I have in here, suppose that alpha is density dependent, is a linear density dependent encounter rate. Does anybody know what this means mathematically? Does anybody know what that means mathematically? If it's linear, it would be a straight line, right? And I'm saying it would be depending on density. So pretend it's like some b. So suppose alpha equals b times n. Alpha equals b times n. And plug it in and see what happens.
It's a different r.
So in this case, for this particular problem, suppose alpha is equal to some b times n and stash it in. What would you get? Wouldn't you get that r is equal to alpha is replaced, by b times n times n 1 plus b times n h times n, which is equal to b times n squared 1 plus b times h n squared. If you graph that baby, you know what you just found? The type 3 response. So the type 3 response implies that alpha is density dependent. That's the difference. So that's how you can get all three of those functional responses. Yes?
Where is the alpha?
Where is it?
What is it?
Alpha usually depends on the detectability of the prey. You know how, like, sometimes you can, if a prey can disguise itself well, you can look at something and you don't even see there's anything there. That's what alpha is really talking about. It's a thing about the detectability. Very nice question. So I also then have some questions that you might want to think about. How might you modify the various functional responses to include differences in climate change? Because they do. It does matter. How are there other functional responses? There actually is. How does a prey that is able to learn change these responses? So what if you had intelligent prey?
Right. Do we have a similar response for kind of the human body reaction for some medication or, for example, like a cancer cell?
Do you know, what's your name?
Young.
Young?
Yeah.
Young asked me a question, and it relates to what I'm currently looking at, and I can give you a great reference. There's a book called Killer Cell Dynamics. I've got the one checked out in the library here, but you can get a PDF of it. But if you want the one, I'm almost done with it. I never realized how intelligent our cells were. They truly are. They are intelligent. It's bizarre as heck to think about how they fight viruses. And so I can refer you to that, and it might answer your questions. Okay. It's an awesome book, by the way. Awesome. I learned so much about it. It focuses a lot on the HIV virus, actually. And they have some awesome mathematical models in there. I'm running low on time. Let me tell you what else I included. So these are things you can take home and do, I hope. Other things I've included in here is something really neat. I wasn't I didn't know if I'd have time to do this, but I thought, well, what the heck? I wanted to give you a feel for what, how math biologists work together with biologists. And one of the things that we do is you use field data to actually estimate parameters. Now that's a whole field in itself, I'll be honest with you. But this is a really cool little problem. If you took the time and I left a table here, you could use the data, and I wanted you to, but I'm running low on time here, so I'll let you finish it, but you could plot your data results. You have results from your data, right? You could take that R equals, and we could take and flip both sides of those equations. You still have equality, but notice you can peel it apart now. You can divvy up the 1 over alpha n with both terms. So you have 1 over r equals 1 over alpha n plus h. Doesn't that look like a straight line now? So now if you plotted your data, instead of having that curve that looked like the type 2 curve is what you should have been getting if you were plotting those, now you got a line. You have a straight line. And you can now, by if you peel, and I left it as an exercise, it's real easy to do this next exercise. Let 1 over r be your y. Let 1 over alpha be your m. 1 over n be your x. And h then is your y-intercept. So now you have a straight line, and now you could look at your straight line and kind of fit, you know, you have data now. Then you could draw a straight line, and where it intersects the y-axis, that's my h. The slope of it is 1 over a. So 1 over the slope is a. And you've got estimates for your parameters in these models then. And that's usually derived by working with a biologist who goes out in the field, which I did, meaning I worked with a biologist who went out in the field. He laughed at us because we didn't get up early enough to help him. But he made us go wander about for 3 or 4 hours anyway, just for payback, because he wanted us to go look for wolf spiders. Me and my other mathematician friend, we got up, drank ourselves some coffee, talked, ate some good breakfast, and we went out about 8:30. And Nebraska is similar to Texas in the summers, actually. It gets hot pretty quick. So then we go out at 8:30 and wander about for 3 hours, and we did not see a single wolf spider.